This is the Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein
on AM 790.
Learn how you can maximize customer value
while minimizing waste.
And now the leader of Lean Nation,
Captain Carl,
at your station for talk and business.
AM 790.
Hey, and welcome to Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talking business. Happy Monday to everybody out there in the Lean Nation. I'll tell you what, those weekends roll around too doggone quick. And that's what Toyota Production System's all about. That's what TPM's all about, is time isn't a commodity. Time has a beginning and an end, and if you lose time, you lose everything. So, you know, the weekend, you got to maximize that time. So think about it. Just from a TPS standpoint, if you have a game plan going into the weekend, you can maximize your time. You don't have waste. If you have TPM, think about all the times you get ready to get in your boat, get in your car, go somewhere, and you haven't done the preventative maintenance to go to the trip. Well, maybe your grandmother's house or your mother-in-law, I should say your mother-in-law's house, might not be such a bad thing if the car doesn't work and you can't go. But, you know, all the other cool things that you want to do during a weekend. But during the work week, it's critical, too, because a machine downtime is a killer. And, you know, in the middle of this summer, we were talking on the Lean Nation right here at Vibeco, at my home, the Vibration Nation. We had a machine go down. And unexpectedly, it went down. And I don't know if it could have been preempted by a better TPM process, but it was down. Especially when we needed that machine at the worst time, Murphy steps in. And you know, you really got it. You got to figure that out. And thank God we had a great network, because if you remember, I was talking about that. I reached out to a bunch of machine tool people across the country and different people in my manufacturing network of people. And we had a valve flown in via the Midwest from Australia within 48 hours. It was here on the floor. And the regular valve through the traditional roads that we ordered that valve came in 4 weeks later. And I told them to cancel the order 2 days, you know, the day we got that valve. 4 weeks later, we would have been down for 4 weeks. It would have killed us. And you can have everything, just shows you can have everything else perfectly aligned, right people, right material, right information, right attitudes, right process, and boom, a machine goes down and you're dead in the water. People in manufacturing know what I'm talking about. But even if you're not in manufacturing, it's the same thing if you're in office, if you're a knowledge worker, and the system goes down, your computer goes down, you forget to change the batteries on your wireless mouse. It happens to me all the time, and then I yell for IT, and they say, you got to change the batteries, and I say, okay, but it's still a 10-minute process when you need it the most. So, you know, you have to think about, how can I keep things up? You know, your machines are down. How do we keep them up? And it stinks, and it's frustrating, and it sets you back, and it creates a ton of mora, stress, and mori, strain, and muda, waste. So today we actually have three guests with us today, two on the line and one here in the studio. We have Michael Kuda and Ellis New are with Productivity Inc., a leading consulting and lean training firm, and they are here to talk to us about total productive maintenance. And I have their associate, Lisa Provenzano, here in the studio with me. So welcome, everybody, to the Lean Nation.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Carl.
Thanks, Carl.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit about, for those people in the Lean Nation that don't know really what total productive maintenance is, if you could give us the elevator pitch for it.
All right, who's going to take that one, Michael or Ella?
Go ahead, Ella. That one's yours.
I'm having trouble hearing. This is Ellis, and I'll take that. Total productive maintenance, when you look at it, the elevator speech, try to make it brief, is a process, a systematic approach to improving, as you said in your opening there, Carl, a systematic process aimed at improving equipment process effectiveness. And a key metric that we use to measure that effectiveness is to measure that improvement is a metric called overall equipment effectiveness, which is one of the many key performance indicators or leading indicators that we use to kind of direct the path or the journey of the process. PPM is made up of 8 different elements, and I'm not going to go into the detail of what those 8 elements are, but those elements in unison put together and expanded systematically is, as I said, the goal of improving equipment process effectiveness.
So I was really talking about some of the things was preventative maintenance instead of productivity and maintenance, and I was sprinkling the two, commingling the two, and they are really not made to commingle with each other.
Well, you could say that, but when you look at those 8 elements, one of those elements, Carl, is just that. The maintenance improvement pillar, as we call it, or maintenance improvement element, and heavily embedded in that particular pillar is the preventative maintenance part of maintenance improvement. So you're spot on with saying that preventative maintenance is a key, and it's certainly one of the key elements in total productive maintenance. It's just that we also have 7 other elements that we talk about in the process.
Mm-hmm. So now when you guys come into a facility and want to talk to people about this, do you have a building block that you start on? What's the foundation for total productive maintenance?
Michael, you want to go after that one? You want me to go with that one as well?
That was under your umbrella there.
Okay.
We were talking about how to approach all this, because it's such a broad breadth of understanding that goes along with TPM. We divided it up. So they're still under your umbrella, Ellis.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely talk to that as well then, Carl, and thanks, Michael. When you look at total productive maintenance, and one of the first things to do when we interface with someone within our client base or prospective new client, certainly a good understanding of what their current state is, whether you want to call it a formal assessment or an informal assessment of what their current state is. Where's the opportunity at? It's very critical. You know, one of the questions that we often hear is, well, what's going to be my ROI? What am I going to get out of this? Well, to tell you what you're going to get out of it, we first and foremost need to understand where you're currently at. And you know, a lot of what we're looking at is around the preventative maintenance. But Carl, also very critical is to understand when you look at improvement, continuous improvement, the Toyota Production System, TPM. All of those things. Another key element is the people, the culture. What's the current state of the culture? And it's very critical that we not only look at improving the process itself, but as it relates to equipment or equipment supporting the process, it's very critical, too, that we understand the current state of the people, understand what training's necessary or what are going to be some of the necessary trainings. What are we doing from the standpoint of engaging our people in the day-to-day? Are they, as some organizations historically have always said, are they just glorified button pushers, or are they truly process owners? If we haven't empowered them to become process owners, it's also critical that as we make this transformation, as we implement and make this transformation, that we're not only looking at improving the equipment, the process, but that we're improving our people as well.
You know, and the OEE piece hit me as really, really an area that most companies, where even if you're a knowledge worker, that you can improve productivity, improve, you know, uptime, improve your velocity and your throughput tremendously. Because, you know, we looked at just in our machining area, you know, the OEE, we were down in the low teens. You know, before we started looking at how we were processing things through, we're up probably now in the 50-60%, you know, in OEE, and shooting for, you know, 75-80%. And, you know, it makes a huge difference. You go from the teens to 40-50%. It's like buying new equipment. It's like having another shift. It's like just getting that extra leg up in manufacturing. And that can happen throughout a whole organization, just not in a machine shop, right?
Absolutely. And Carl, what you mentioned as you talked about, and I'll call it the baseline when you started in the teens, I'm very quick, we at Productivity are very quick to tell our clients, too many people get hung up on that world-class benchmark of discrete manufacturing, which is 85% OEE, which is the world-class benchmark. let's not get too hung up on that right now. Let's understand what our current state is and know that before you even get remotely close to that, if you double a 17% OEE to make it 34% OEE, you could conceivably say that you've also just doubled the capacity that you got out of the existing process to show on paper two like processes, but you've not had to invest the capital money to get there. And that in itself can mean six and seven figures to the bottom line of some organizations. Just by doing that, you can only begin to fathom then what might happen if we double that then again, which gets us closer to the back door of that 85%. So let's never want to get hung up on the world-class number and understand the current state of where you're at and understand in making those improvements. Once you get into those upper 60, 70, and certainly the lower 80 percentiles, it's going to take just as much investment then from going from a 78 to an 80 as it probably took you with the low-hanging fruit that got you from 17% to 34%. And at some point in time, you may realize that 85% is not a number I'm going to shoot for. We've gotten more than what we expected to get just by getting into the 50 or 60 percentile.
And I'll tell you what, Ellis, that going for those higher numbers, the larger percentiles, anywhere from, I'd even say from 65 to 85%, you have to organize your information flow. You got to organize your material flow. You got to have everybody in the whole organization. Now it's not just one small area you're working on. You're working on the global organization to get you those higher percentages, and that's what people miss out. They think they can do it monochromatically. Won't happen.
Carl, what you just said. Literally.
And I'm going to hold that thought, because when we come back from break, I hear the music, we'll finish up on that thought and try and get people thinking a little bit more realistically and being happy with what they get. And that being said, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We'll be right back after this quick message.
Learn how to maximize customer value and minimize waste.
You're lean, you're not too far between either, but are you, huh?
Now, strength, lean and switch.
The Lean Nation. Afternoons at 4.
This thing that sounds like velvet pancakes.
On AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to Lean Nation on AM 790. We are talking to the people at Productivity, Inc. We have Michael Kuda on the line, we have Ellis New on the line, and we have their lovely Lisa Provenzano here in the studio that's just done a tour of the Vibration Nation. And before we left for break, we were talking a little bit about OEE. We were talking about, you know, process efficiencies, systematic process efficiencies, and talking about that people get visions of really, really high numbers of what they want to do. And I kind of sparked some kind of comment from you, Ellis, that I'd like to follow up with you. No.
Yep. Carl, what I was wanting to say, the comment that you made going into your break there was really spot on the summary at 30,000 feet of what really TPM is all about. Our definition in summary statement goes as this. It's a company-wide, or in some cases, if you're a small mom-and-pop shop, we would say it's a facility-wide approach involving all departments. A lot of organizations view TPM first as a maintenance program. It's so much more than that. And then we look only then at the production, engineer, and technical departments. The other departments that you alluded to before the break, that's spot on to what TPM is really about. It also involves the purchasing department. It involves the sales department, the planning, the scheduling folks. All those people have to be involved in this. And when you start talking about putting together a process involving all of these elements, all eight of those elements mandate that these departments all be involved. And to summarize, what you're really saying is involves the entire value stream from start to finish or from beginning to end.
Yeah, and you really have to do a material and information flow as a baseline, because I asked you, what do you do when you normally come into an organization? You need to know current state. Well, current state, I'm sure, you know, includes some kind of either value stream or material and information flow, and see where the disconnects are, see where everything is to benchmark the thing, and then go from there and see where the biggest constraint is that's keeping total productivity from happening within a facility.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
You know, Carol, the significance here, too, of OEE is that it has everything you need when you're looking at overall enterprise performance. There's a whole camp out there today that's suggesting that, you know, OEE is evolving to be one of those historic, classical measurements that people are heavily relying on. You know, for so many years, we've looked at inventory turns as being a true measure of system performance, and it sure is. Yet OEE is right there with it now. And what it allows us to do, it allows us to collect, and again, you know, collecting data, this whole thing of TPM and Lean, it's all data-driven. It's all fact-based. And once you have the data, you can translate that easily then into financials. And once you can translate that into money, you know, people really listen, and they listen very carefully. So an important segue here is looking at the OEE measurement, translating it into money, and then you can do is make a significant impact on your ROA, the return on assets. If you look at return on assets, and what you have to do to improve return on assets is fall back and improve that OEE. So it's a very holistic measure, very, very important today.
One crazy phenom that's happening here within our organization, and maybe you guys can help me clarify this, is that when we started out, we figured out our machine shop was a bottleneck. It was a constraint, and we needed to get our overall equipment efficiency up in the machine shop to get the throughput and meet the tack time. So we measured, worked on it, and we did, you know, all we did a lot of SMED exercises, worked on it. Now, you know, we're not so really detail-oriented to measure because we know we're going to another level looking at the information flow and the material flow into the facility. And until we figure out how to get that flowing well, we've kind of stopped measuring things because we're holding stable where we were before. But we've stopped measuring because we have so much more work to do in other areas. And once we get that approach, you know, the information flow, material flow working well again, we'll start measuring again, because measuring takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of effort. Is that a bad thing?
I can run with that. No, it's not a bad thing. I think what you're doing is we're really looking at the value added by the value chain. You look upstream, you look downstream. It's who are the customers. It's that old trite but true. You know, every customer has a supplier, and every supplier has a customer. We have to understand each other, and we have to know how we add value, and what links us together is communication and is data and those information streams that you're looking at. So no, I don't think that's a bad thing. What you're suggesting, I believe, is important, is that you've been able to sustain, that you took a systemic approach to this thing, and you're not concerned it's going to backslide on you. And that gives you a lot of time then to look at that information flow and those patterns that are there. So I think you're right on.
Yeah, because I think that once we get some of the other things, we're taking the approach, TPS has the approach, the man, the machine, the material, the method, and the management.
Sure.
So now we've come from the machine, and we're looking more at the man, material, method, and management of what's going on. And then we'll start measuring again, because we know it's going to just catapult us into the stratosphere of numbers of overall equipment efficiency and overall plant efficiency as well of productivity gains.
Absolutely. You know, like what Ellis was saying, you can go from 20% to 40%. That's huge. That's so big when a company can do something like that. And as you were indicating earlier, just going from 50 to 60 is just huge. You know, you're starting to get into the world now of having competitive advantage when you start getting up in those areas.
Yeah. And Lisa had a comment here. Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, just when we were talking during the break, Carl, we were talking about other metrics that support some of the TPM activities in addition to OEE, like mean time between repairs, mean time between failure, and going back to what Ellis and Mike are saying about TPM being a data-driven process, and what are some of the metrics that are unique to each company and trying to determine what those things are. So, and that goes back to you about, you know, starting to measure, and well, what are the things that you should be measuring? What are the things that are going to help, you know, help support activities that are going to be important to you? So you're not just, you know, randomly measuring things, but you're measuring things that are going to drive improvement to you.
Yeah, it's critical, critical, critical out there. So with that being said, you're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790 on this rainy New England Monday, and we'll be right back after our sponsors. You're listening to Lean Nation.
Now, more of the Lean Nation with Captain Carl on your station for talk and business. AM 790.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation on AM 790. If you're just tuning in, we have three guests with us. We have Michael Kuda with us. We have Ellis New with us. We have Lisa Provenzano with us. They are from Productivity, Inc. They are a leading consulting and lean training firm, and they're here to talk to us today about total productive maintenance. And with that being said, guys, what are some of the industries and some of the people that have made a profound effect on you, just their outlook on becoming game changers in their market space with the TPM process?
I'll start with that one, Ellis.
Okay.
There's a real pointed interest here in some industries over others. There are some industries that are certainly more active than others with the TPM process, and it's for given reasons. You look inside the first level into oil and gas, pharmaceuticals, building products, the airline industry, paper industry. You'll see a much wider use of the principles and practices, and for all those obvious reasons that historically those industries have large capital investments in their physical assets, and in turn, maintenance is a significant part of their direct operating cost. And when you start looking at thousands and thousands of dollars an hour in fully burdened operating rates, there's a need to take care of things. And in many ways, TPMs are called the lean for the process industry, because things are so different for them. But that industry has certainly made a profound impact on how I see TPM and the results that you're able to achieve. And, you know, because that industry is very deep-rooted, and traditionally maintenance in these industries has been really looked at as a cost to be managed rather than a strategic process that helps ensure profitability. It just hasn't been looked at that way. And that's really taken a turn today. We're working with a couple different major organizations right now in the process industry that are just doing a remarkable job in reaping the benefits of a well-positioned TPM effort. And like we were saying before, you know, our research shows that with a well-positioned TPM effort, you know, top performers are seeing a 20% gain in their OEE. And again, that translates right back to their return on assets. So again, oil and gas, pharmaceuticals, those industries certainly have made an impact. And there's been individuals as well within those industries that today are really cutting edge out there in some of the things that these people are doing. We've met some great people, and we know some great people out there that are doing wonderful things with TPM.
Yeah, and the other thing that strikes me, we're in Germany, not last year, in 2008. And I was amazed. This is all a process industry. It was for chemicals and pharmaceuticals, and food industry. And it seemed like all the equipment, they're driving to more flexibility in their equipment, to do smaller batches, because that's a competitive edge as well, because they have a lot of inventory dollars tied up in processing for different people. So if you can reduce those inventory, the WIP, you know, and get more flexibility and be more creative and have more variety. Everybody wants variety now without having to pay for variety, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
So,
everybody
you know, that they want a custom. I want a custom. I want it fresh out of the oven. If I'm putting it on my roof, because at least was talking about building products companies, if I'm putting it on my roof, I don't want it sitting in inventory through the freeze and thaw and hot summer for 9, 10, 12 months. I want it coming right off the truck, right to my job site, on the roof, fresh from the factory, because you avoid a lot of little nuanced changes that happen, and that happens in all industries, I'm sure.
And particularly in that process industry, you're right, because the transforming, in the process industry, they transform raw material instead of reconfiguring it. It's really different than the mechanical industry. So they are very equipment dependent, where in the more of a mechanical industry, they're more labor dependent. And as you were saying, even your opening comments today on velocity, it's when you start looking at whip velocity, lead time, all of those things are you can translate that right into financials and right into an impact on a financial statement.
So you guys, I'm sure can't work in a silo, because doing this, depends on your vendors too. So how do you go outside the organization to pull all those people in? Because you guys are working with some big, big companies. And just even getting them to move and think about it is a job. Never mind the vendors. So what carrot do you use to get them on board?
You want to go with that one, Ellis?
Well, yes, I want to go with that. But maybe a parallel comment at the same time. When you talk about the large organizations, Coral, and you're talking about the carrot that it's going to take, yes, you've got to get those senior level leaders. You've got to open their eyes and the what's in it for me, the WIFM question, and then because you're dealing with what you just said, you're dealing with all of these suppliers, all of these folks that are providing asset or asset components, and you've got to get them involved. I come back to, because when you look at TPM, what it really is at 30,000 feet, it's about involving and training people. It's about empowering them to use that training, and it's the closed loop measurement of results. So it goes back to what Lisa said. It's a data driven process. You've got to show them the data. We've got a client right now that we're working with, and they only have in their asset base, they've got 150 pieces of equipment that cost $5.4 million a piece. They got 150 of them. And this is just one of the many things from an asset standpoint. We went to the company that builds these assets, builds these big pieces of equipment for this particular company. They said, hey, we need to get you involved with what we're doing here. And their comment initially was, don't have time for it. Got too many other customers out there that were supplying. And then when we tell them, so wait a minute, if they decide to go with your competitor and start buying assets from your competitor, do the math yourself. 150 times 5.5 million. So we showed them the data. And we said, here's the issues that we're having, and here's what we need from you. And I don't like to say that we're threatening people, that it's a threatening carrot that you're putting out there. But it is, when you look at the total value stream and you start looking at improving a big organization, it's not about just the organization, it's about what the organization uses, it's about who supplies that organization. You have to get those people involved. And a lot of times it comes back to the data. You got to show them the data. Here's what we need, and here's why we need it.
Yeah, and now I figured out why Lisa's on your team. She's got a vowel at the end of her name. So when people don't listen, you call Lisa Provenzano, the redheaded girl from Connecticut. She goes in and breaks a few legs.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, you've got to look at this data.
That's right.
We do what we need to do to get the job done.
Carl, I want to make it, how soon before our next break? Because I want to make a comment to something that's parallel to what we
were. We're like a minute and a half. Go ahead and make it. We'll hold the break.
Take that long.
Yep, go ahead.
So one of these big organizations that Michael's talking about happens to be, and just client confidentiality, we'll just leave it generic in the process industry. And that industry, when we talk about changing the culture, that industry was one of the last industry to really get on board with this. Why? Because that industry mandates something that's become kind of a mock fail-safe. They're used to having spares. Well, why do I need to improve pump or motor reliability? We've got a spare on every process, on every line. And it's always, well, if this one breaks, we've got a spare we can switch over to, and then we'll fix this one and get it back running again. And being from the Marine Corps and having a background in aviation in the Marine Corps, I pulled out my aviation terminology and a little fail-safe that I always go with there. I ask people, how often do they fly on an aircraft? And why is reliability so important in your industry? It's just like in the aviation world. At 38,000 feet, that's the one place that you don't want an unplanned interruption in the process. And even if you have that unplanned interruption, what good is a spare going to do you at 38,000 feet? Mm-hmm. And I've used that analogy a lot with people in the process industry. It's not about the spare. It's about, Carl, what you said in your opening remarks. It's when you have to call upon that spare that really costs us. And
right.
That's what we have to get people's hands around, what we have to open their eyes to. Not about how many extras you got. It's what it costs you when you need that extra. And, you know, in the world of aviation, at 38,000 feet, a spare doesn't do you a whole lot of good. Cloud number 9 is not a good place to park, you know, a 757 with 175 people on it, switch over to the spare. So let's
right.
make sure it lands, it performs as needed, when needed, for as long as needed.
You got it, man. It's so, so important. And with that being said, you're listening to Lean Nation on AM 790. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with the people from Productivity, Inc. See you in a minute.
More of the show that teaches you how to maximize customer satisfaction while minimizing waste. The Lean Nation with Captain Carl on AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation on AM 790. We have the people with Productivity, Inc. with us. They are leading consultants in lean training and total productive maintenance. We have Michael Kuda, Ellis New, and Lisa Provenzano here with us. And we've been talking this show about OEE. We've been talking this show about process industries. We've been talking this show about large assets, capital investments, and how do those capital investments and assets work for us to help improve our customer experience, help improve our velocity of producing things and getting it to the customer on time. And before we left, Ellis was talking about, you know, I asked about carrots. How do you get people involved in this? And he talked about, you know, a company they're working with assets, 150 assets at $5.4 million each. It's a lot of cake. I mean, the Washington, D.C. could use that money right now if they're domestic. They could really use it. And you know, you talked about getting senior-level leaders involved. And I'm sitting here with Lisa during break, and I'm saying, you know what? There's only a handful of senior-level leaders that even want to go out onto a process floor, that even want to go out onto a factory floor, because a couple things happen. You got to deal with problems, and they're dirty, sticky, nasty problems. You got to deal with people that are working on the work that are probably frustrated, have ideas, have never been listened to with their ideas. You have people that, you know, might have agendas out there, and you have to, you know, work through metrics. You have to work through reporting. And how many senior level leaders really even want to do that? I'm shocked. Some people have never even been out on their factory floors.
Yeah, and then Carl and I were joking about the 80-20 rule. You know, we've all heard about the 80-20 rule. A lot of these leaders, they want it to be easy. They want it to just be the 20%, which is the tools, and not the 80%, which is the culture change, which we all talked about earlier. And if it was just the 20%, which is the tools, then everybody would be lean, and they'd all be doing lean principles and process improvement and TPM, because that's the easy part. And really, it's the culture change. It's embedding all of these principles into daily work and making it part of what everybody does every day. That's the challenging part, which we talked about earlier as well. So we kind of talked about that a little bit.
Well, it's a management imperative. You know, Carl, what you have to do, and there's some advice out there for people. There is a different lexicon, and that's really what you're saying, Carl. There's a different lexicon that takes place in communication with inside of these major corporations. That the closer you get to the top, of course, the attention span is directly proportional to where you're at in the pyramid, right?
Mm-hmm.
The closer you get to the top, the smaller the attention span. You have to tell a good story. Most operational people don't tell good stories. Okay, sales and marketing, they tell good stories, but not manufacturing guys. Manufacturing people have to learn how to tell a good story. They have to write a good business case. They have to translate all of these things that we talk about being nice and good. We have to translate them into a return on investment, to a return on assets. It's something that I don't think most manufacturing people do a good job with. They're not skilled, and they don't show a state of readiness to be able to translate results into financial return.
Yeah, but now you're making excuses for the top level guys. What the hell's wrong with them not to go out and see what's going on inside their facilities?
I think the guys that we deal with, they do. They do.
That's a good thing. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, they're out there. You know, we're dealing with some really top notch guys that, and ladies. We know some really well positioned females in the industry as well. And these people are doing a good job, Carl. But yes, there are those that just don't get involved, and that's the laggards. You know, once you're a laggard, it's hard to catch up.
Right, and you know that's a competitive advantage here in the U.S. that people have to get over big attitudes, because this whole TPS, TPM, any things that we're doing here in continuous improvement, you can't be more special than anybody else. You can't go into it with that attitude. And what I tell people is, you know what? You're not that special. You're going to die too. We're all going to die. So what are you going to do in between the time that you're born and you die? You've got to figure it out. So what kind of things would you recommend to the audience here in the time we have left on where to get started? What should they do?
Where to get started? I would be terribly remiss if I didn't say a good place to get started is go to our TPM certification course at Ohio State. How's that? I'll throw a plug.
That's a good thing.
Throw the plug in for productivity. You can just jump on our website and find all you want to know about that, but it's an excellent course. The first thing that has to happen falls right in line with what you're talking about right now. That we call it pull creation. Okay? Pull creation. You know, is leadership on board? And that's what you're saying, Carl. Is leadership on board? Is there a leadership commitment? You have to build your case, and then you have to sell the case. Because absent of that, you're going to have pockets of excellence. Okay, you're never going to get best in class. You're going to have operational improvement, not value stream improvement. So you need to have leadership on board. Once you achieve that, the next step is really what we call a readiness assessment. And I'm not talking here about a typical Likert 1-5 ranking of current state, but I'm talking about an assessment that's a frank roundtable discussion to assess the readiness and the willingness of location management team to enthusiastically support this stuff. You have to sit down and pound it out. You know, are we ready? Are we really serious about doing this? And so once you can get over those couple hurdles, then now you're off. Now we have some educational events. We have value stream mapping, analysis, site plan design. But that's what you have to do. You have to really go through that pain up front of you have to have a pull. You can't push this. It won't work.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be curious as well. You have to have some curiosity. How do they find you guys? I hear the music. Give us a website. Give us some emails. And we're going to post it on Facebook as well, everybody out there in the Lean Nation. Go ahead.
Productivity Inc., all one word, productivityinc.com. Very simple.
Okay, we're going to look you up there. We're going to post you guys on Facebook. Thank you so much for being with us today. I can't wait to meet you in person. We have your point person here, Lisa, so I can imagine what you two guys are like.
Hey, thank you, Carl.
You're welcome. Carl. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carl.
Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It for the Lean Nation today, and we'll see you tomorrow. Over and out.
Till I'm done.